Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Dark Silhouettes and Other Strange Stories, Volume 3, Story Number 1. I have a story from South Arkansas, but I think I have an explanation for it. We have a hunting camp that is rural, to say the least. One afternoon, during modern gun deer season, everybody had gone out to hunt. Sun is going down, and so everybody is returning to camp, standing out in the yard talking about the afternoon. One guy hadn't made it back yet. A little while later, it was past dark, and we started wondering if maybe we should go and make sure he didn't have a heart attack or whatever. About that time, we hear his four-wheeler coming. When he rounded the corner of the cabin, even though it was dark, you could tell he was white as a ghost. He stopped, and we asked what was wrong. He said he had been on a stand, overlooking the slough, said he had seen something big and dark with a dead deer slung over its shoulder walking through the slough. We asked why he hadn't shot it. He said he didn't think he could kill it. He was hunting with a .44 caliber rifle. I think what he saw was someone poaching on our ground, but I may be wrong. Next story. This was the Florida Everglades in the 70s, and my mom saw Bigfoot in the Florida Everglades. Actually, many people in Florida call them swamp apes, but many also just refer to them as Bigfoot. She doesn't like to tell people what she saw because she knows they will pass her off as crazy. Anyway, my stepdad, an avid hunter and fisherman, he's had this giant swamp buggy thing. It looked like an overgrown tractor or bulldozer to me. The thing was huge. Anyhow, he liked to go off the beaten path and into the deep woods and marshlands to explore with it. So my mom would go with him a lot of times. And one time they were deep in these rarely driven dirt roads and trails off of Alligator Alley. My mom, being in the passenger seat, said she was sitting with her head turned toward the right, just looking at the woods next to her as they were slowly driving along. And as they passed by a road or a trail to her right, she said she saw this tall, hairy, ape-person-looking thing with very long arms crossing that road, going in the same direction as they were. She immediately told my stepdad what she saw, and he said that, well, there have been a lot of Bigfoot sightings in the area, but it was probably just a bear or something. She accepted this and figured she was just imagining it, being that she didn't believe in Bigfoot. About a minute after that, my stepdad said he had to go to the bathroom, so he parked the thing in the middle of the road, hopped off, and walked into the wood line to do his thing. My mom sat there waiting, and up ahead she saw the thing again. A Bigfoot, not a bear. She had a better view this time. She said it was at least 7 feet tall, covered in hair, and had arms almost to its knees, and took very long strides. She said it walked out of the woods and crossed the road into the woods on the other side like before. She immediately started freaking out and screamed for my stepdad. He came running out. She told him what she saw, but it was already gone. Said he believed her again and that there were several reported sightings around that time. They moved up to where she saw it. He got down and looked around but didn't see anything. He later went back to the same area a few times but didn't find anything either. Story number 2. One sunny day in early spring, some 7 or 10 years ago, my daughter and I were riding bicycles on the Plain River Trail. It's a well-maintained trail about 8 feet wide with plenty of space for two riders. Equestrians use that trail too, so often. It curves by the river. 100-year-old trees make heavy canopy on some parts, but there are many sections with the sun exposure. Headed north, we passed the central road and got out of canopies at the section where the trail borders to the Groot Waste Landfill, fenced area where is a whole hill made out of trash. We kept our pace, quick riding, and left after the curve. I saw it some 30 to maybe 50 feet in front of us in the middle of the trail, the Montauk Monster. From the first moment, I knew exactly what I saw. It did seem dead, but I was only worried how my daughter, who was about 8 or 11 at the time, would get scared to see dead things, remembering how she got scared to see a dead sparrow before. I rang the bell on my bicycle. The monster didn't move. It was the size of a medium-sized dog, like a Rottweiler, and smaller than a German Shepherd. Somehow I decided to ride by it, not stopping. I told my daughter not to slow down, not to stop, and not to look at it. Thank God it was dead. No stench. We continued our ride for half an hour. I couldn't believe what we had just seen. I asked her if she got scared of dead animals on the trail, and she was worried, but not really scared, so we went back the same way. By the time we got to the same place, to my surprise, the Montauk Monster was not there anymore. It was gone. I'm sure we didn't see anyone riding or walking, especially not the park district crew, with a small truck that I assume cleans the trail after the horse riders. We were alone that day on the trail. I did not want to talk to her about it at all, concerned that she would get upset, and I even hoped she would forget it. I knew the Montauk Monster from internet for about 15 years when I saw it. The story goes that its carcass was found on the Montauk beach. Someone took a picture of it and went to find some way to bring the carcass home. By the time he got to the beach again, the carcass was gone. Pictures depicted a carcass of the beast who shouldn't exist. It has a body like a dog, claws, and a bird's beak. A year or two later, I was watching my favorite TV series when they showed the Montauk Monster. When my daughter saw it on the TV screen, she said, "Dad, that's the thing we saw while riding bicycle." She saw it well from the 2-foot distance as well as I did, and she recognized it for what it was. When I was thinking later, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I should stop and return. But we were riding that fast. I saw it too late, and I didn't have time to think right. Only later I got scared. What if that thing wasn't dead, and we passed so close to it? On the other hand, I'm still wondering, how come that thing disappeared after only 30 minutes? Head of the carcass was away from the garbage landfill. Somehow I feel it's related to the garbage landfill and its contents. That's just the best explanation I have. Next story. Years ago, we bought a 100-year-old plus house. We had 2 small boys, and I was pregnant with a 3rd child. The house had 5 bedrooms and 3 baths, was painted white, and was the only house big enough for us in our price range. There were so many things that began to happen after we moved in. Toy cars would move across the floor, lights turned on and off, as well as appliances, the usual stuff. Then one of my children told me a hand came out of the ceiling and touched them. That was it. I decided to have a chat with our guest. I told the ghost in no uncertain terms that there was no way we were moving. We couldn't afford it. I also told the ghost that I thought my boys, nicknamed Axe and Smash at the time, would torment it far worse than it would torment us. I then said that if the ghost wanted us out, it better come up with a new way for us to make enough money to buy a house of equal size with a family room and a big backyard in a better part of town, or we were staying. Swear to God, in 18 months' time, my husband made money hand over fist. We have never seen anything like that ever again. We had enough to buy a great house on the best street in town. Go figure. Next story. This was around 1985. I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, living in the same house where I saw my first ghost, my guardian. I could write an entire volume about my love for that house and the garden. It was the best place to grow up in. One of my favorite nightly activities, also known as bedtime procrastination technique, was to climb into my parents' bed while they were kicking back in the lounge room. I was pretty proud of this accomplishment because it was a waterbed. This seemed near impossible to climb the shiny, solid, wood-black fortress walls which chambered the water mattress. With the bed conquered, I could reach and switch on the bedside lamps. From here, I would pretend to be a panther prowling around the slow-moving surface until I eventually fell asleep. Those were fun times. One such night, I conked out and curled up to have a doze. I noticed a spider on the wall and recognized it as a huntsman. Now, the huntsman is a large Australian spider which looks brownish, hairy tree tarantula. And I'm convinced they're tree tarantulas. Now, this huntsman on the wall was different. It was, for lack of a better description, colorful. I recalled red and yellow patterns and a slightly different brown. Its legs were thin and tapered. It had only 4 legs and was striking a star pose. There was something very strange about this huntsman, and I stared at it in wonder. Now, I paid no mind to the reaction of the huntsman, and as I gazed upon this peculiar spider, my attention broke to a sound of murmuring voices, clear and deep but muffled. At first I thought it was Dad from the lounge, but the muffled voices were coming from a much closer source. I glanced around, nothing. I looked at the huntsman, and he's still there chilling out. I was looking to the left when I saw out of the corner of my eye my parents' curtain wardrobe move. The curtain wardrobe was a wardrobe without a door. Dad put a curtain on the front as a makeshift door. This fabric had moved. I looked to the wardrobe curtain. The voices were still murmuring. Then came light, quick footsteps on the seagrass matting floor. I don't know if I could hear or understand what these voices were saying. What I can remember is one saying, "Quick," and "Hurry up." These two statements were particularly clear and deep. They sounded the closest. I was in the middle of the bed. Slowly, I went to the end of the bed to where the wardrobe and the voices were. I peeked over the end of the bed and saw what looked like an animalistic doll-sized toy looking out of the wardrobe toward the bedroom door. More murmuring, I looked to the door where this entity was looking and saw another similar-looking entity running out of the bedroom. I only saw this one from behind, didn't see his face. He was wearing a yellow-striped t-shirt and blue shorts. I looked back to the first one. He slowly slid behind the wardrobe curtains. I could swear he was looking at me when he did this. Then I heard something that I still get the creeps thinking about it. Shh! The loudest shooshing I've ever heard. It decayed like the acoustics of a church, not a furnished average-sized suburban bedroom. Everything fell silent, but for the TV in the lounge. I made haste to the other end of the bed, as far away as possible, and hid under the covers. I wanted to yell for my parents, but I knew they'd just put me in my bed. The one running had turned a corner in the direction of my room. I definitely wasn't going in there. I peeked out from the covers and stared at the huntsman again. For some reason, this was comforting, like having company. I continued to stare at Fancy Pan Huntsman until Mom came in and carried me to my room. I demanded Mom remove all the dolls from my bedroom. I don't know why, but I had an aversion to dolls after this. These critters didn't look like dolls, though. They looked more akin to soft toys. So I don't know why I didn't freak out about the soft toys instead. I was curious yet calm initially to witness these things. Now, when the creature appeared to stare at me, while slowly slipping behind the curtain, all the calmness was replaced with fear, a fear that I was seen by it. The other time I saw one of these guys was in the backyard. This time it was less vivid and less eventful. I was around the same age. It wasn't too long after the first time. I was playing on the lawn and I heard a deep, resonant voice again. It wasn't my guardian, who I used to hear sometimes. Immediately remembered the colorful huntsman night. I looked to the direction of the voice, which was coming from a part in the backyard, which was completely overgrown and gnarly. In the direct sunlight, I saw a light pink skin toy-like thing with black eyes, nose, and frizzy sort of hair, wearing a sweater scamper into the wandering dew. Didn't hear or see anything more than that. The appearance of these creatures were similar, but each had their own unique look. The two's face I saw both had black beady eyes, black noses, and red lips. Their skin looked like it was made of smooth cloth. Their hair was frizzy, as if it had been teased. I guess they were around a foot tall, varying in height and build. The one peering from the curtain wardrobe had dark brownish orangey skin and bright red lips. I think this is the one that said, "Shh." I didn't get a look at his body, just his face poking out of the curtain. I'd say he was slight of build, going by his gaunt face. His nose was pointed. The one running out of the bedroom had darker brown skin. He had a heavier build and a much larger head. Didn't get a look at his face. The one outside was much lighter skin, very pale pink, with a droopy red mouth and flatter nose. These weren't toys of mine. Never seen them before or since. I'm sure they weren't no howdy-doody possessed toys either. These guys had limb mobility, expressive faces, dexterity, and motor skills. The murmurs, I'm not sure about it. It could have been a language or just groans. My memory is vague on that. They all sounded male to me, all very deep. Not what you expect from a small, cute toy. Well, I've thought about those toy-like creatures. a lot ever since. Teetering on obsession, really. I decided to look into the huntsman for them the first time. There is no such thing as a colorful four-legged huntsman. I took to the internet in a quest for answers. After many bungled queries and ridiculous search results, I found the spider in question really does exist. So did more perplexed yelling at the screen. According to the internet, the St. Andrew's Cross spider is the Australian subspecies of a global genus of bizarre-looking spiders. The St. Andrew's Cross spider is similar in appearance to a thin, wispy-legged huntsman with bright yellow and red markings. The St. Andrew's Cross spider rests by placing its front and rear legs together, resulting in the appearance of a four-legged pose. That's where it gets its name. And that's how it looked on the wall. And there was more info on a matching X design, which it built into a circular web and upon a matching center pattern. As a side note, the moment I clapped eyes on photos of the St. Andrew's Cross spider, that night came flooding back in a torrent of profound snapshots. It's been quite the momentous payoff finding this unique arachnid and staring at it again all these years later. Now, the following that I'm going to describe happened around the same time, 1985, I was 4 or 5. And occasionally I'd wake up in the middle of the night when Mom and Dad were asleep. Sometimes I'd sneak out of bed and walk around the house to experience the way it looked at and felt with the lights off. I love doing this. To this day, I love turning all the lights off and just hanging out in the dark. Sometimes it's scary, but mostly it's enchanting. One night, I either woke up or was woken, not sure. I remember hearing sounds coming from down the hall as soon as I awoke. It sounded like someone was moving about in the house. Maybe it was because I could see from my doorway that all the lights were off, but I felt the noises didn't sound like Mom or Dad. My curiosity piqued instantly, and I got up to take a gander. My room was at the end of the hallway. I could see the kitchen from my doorway. Nope, nothing going on in there. Then I looked across to Mom and Dad's room. Their door was closed as normal. It wasn't them. I ventured down the hallway slowly. The seagrass matting underfoot made the most noise when one wished to be stealthy. I quietly neared the lounge at the far end of the hallway, growing impatient with my stealthy, slow pace. Finally, at the lounge entrance, I was surprised to find the lounge room very dimly lit. It was unlike any other light source. Very unique, akin to moonlight, only duller. Not a moment after taking in the lounge room in this new atmosphere, I spied a very tall, lanky stick figure of a man. I say man, but I really have no idea. All these years, I think of him as Chalk Man, because he reminded me of a huge chalk-drawn stick figure made of incandescent fog. Chalk Man was much brighter than the rest of the room, but he was still very dim. I wasn't the least bit afraid, oddly enough. He was using one of my toys. This toy was a pen-like device, which was battery-powered and paired with a book. It was an educational interactive toy. The book had a bunch of puzzles and whatnot in it. The pen, which had colored lights on it, was placed on black panels beside the puzzles and would light up green for correct and red for wrong answers. This pen didn't write as it had no ink. Instead, there was a sensor pad at the tip. It was quite a large pen, wide black with decorative colored stripes and little green and red lights. I loved this pen and would use it like a librarian, scanning all my books and shelving them. Those were fun times. This pen also fascinated me, as I could never figure out how it worked. I stuck that thing on every object, and it always lit up red for wrong. The only time it lit green was on a correct answer and its accompanying book. It seemed Chalk Man had the same idea, as he was stooped over the TV, touching the video machine with his pen. I stood in the doorway dumbfounded. Chalk Man did the same to one of the stereo speakers and the record player or amplifier it might have been. When he got to the record amplifier area, he turned around to face me while still stooped over. He definitely saw me as I was standing there in the doorway befuddled. I felt self-conscious, so I stepped behind the door and peeked at him. He kept on touching things with a pen. Then he came to an area I couldn't peek at comfortably from behind a door. I grew scared as this area was closer to me, and from my angle, he would soon be but out of my view, directly behind the door I was peeking from. Before this could happen, I ran back to bed and pretended to sleep in case he came in. I didn't realize until I was a teenager remembering this that Chalk Man seemed to only be interested in touching electrical objects with his pen. The next morning, I headed straight to the lounge to find my pen. Found it on the rocking chair. Thought that was an odd place for Chalk Man to leave it, but was instantly distracted by it lighting green when I used it to touch the chair. Ever since that night, the pen would light a 50-50 mix of green and red for any object. Maybe Dad put new batteries in it before I got up and changed its functioning behavior, or was it just a coincidence? But I like to think Chalk Man had something to do with, though I haven't a clue what. I must have been really going heavy with that pen that morning, because eventually Dad got the book and sat me down on the floor with me. We went through the book together, but I kept touching Dad's knee with the pen, which was lighting green. I looked at Dad as to say, "Isn't that amazing?" Dad stuffed the pen up his nose and pulled it out his ear, a visual illusion, and this made me laugh. Later that day, it rained pretty heavy. The light outside was dark overcast mixed with glowing brightness. It's a very unusual light that hardly occurs. It's different to average overcast and brighter than a dark storm. It's such a delicate light which lit the house beautifully. For some reason, this rainy storm memory is one of the most vivid from my childhood. I remember it like it was yesterday, and like I was who I am today, having the moment of contemplation. And this is my last story about living in that house around the same time that I've spoken about. And this has to do with an entity that I came to think of as Tweed. Because the first time I saw him, he was wearing a tweed jacket, and it changed something in me. Sometimes hauntings come from a location, sometimes an object, or sometimes a person. I think Tweed might have come from the location. In the mid-80s, we lived in a house at Hotham Street in Box Hill. However, when I checked it out on Google Maps, the suburb now says Mount Albert, bordering suburb. But I've based my research on Box Hill because that's what the address was back then. Many of Melbourne's older suburbs were named after towns in England by the predominantly English settlers. The city of Melbourne is mapped out in a grid modeled on London. Box Hill is named after a place in Surrey, England. It's just outside the main city of Melbourne, outside of the grid. Hotham Street in the 80s was a hodgepodge of homes from the 1920s or 30s era and some more modern 60s brick homes. We lived in one of the 30s houses. It was sandwiched between another 1930s looking home and a block of units which were orange brick, probably built in the 50s or 60s. We were right near the corner of White Horse Road next to the brick units. White Horse Road is one of the early roads in the town, now a main road. Now, according to Wikipedia, in the late 1800s, Box Hill was favored by artists who wanted to paint the Australian bush. It was also home to farming, orchards, and vineyards. Now, behind our yard was a paddock with at least one horse. We used to feed the horse from our back fence. Down the road a bit was a laneway, which must have been near a vineyard at some point because there were a lot of vines rambling up the trees and around the grass. The laneway was very dark, dense, and lush. It led to the horse paddock around the back. It was a beautiful place. Now, this happened around the time that other weird things I'd experienced at this house, and I'm not sure which came first. My bedroom was a pretty simple affair. The bed was under a window. The window had some kind of curtains which were quite sheer. There was a street light that shone in from somewhere. It was quite light in there with the lights were off. When I was in bed, the window was to my left. My bedroom was down the side of the house, neither front nor back, in the middle. Outside my window was the side fence and a tree, a spindly tree or shrub thing, tall but rambling, possibly a tea tree. One night I woke up and saw a peculiar-looking man in the tree outside my window. He was sitting back in the branches like he was quite accustomed to doing so. I wasn't afraid, but curious. I liked to climb trees, but I was sure this tree wasn't strong enough to climb. I could see him where the curtains hung out from the window. My pillow was maybe 2 feet from where the window started, so I was seeing him from the end of the curtain. The tree was not terribly sturdy. It didn't make a lot of sense. He sat there looking at me, and I kept looking at him. His demeanor seemed relaxed. His skin was pale and sort of reflecting the streetlight, but his nose had my full attention. It was long, big, and unusual, shaped like a toucan's beak. It jutted out about 6 inches like a toucan. His mouth seemed wide. He wore a tweed jacket or coat. I don't recall his eyes. Well, I think they were large. His hair looked teased or like it had been left to its own devices. I couldn't get over his nose, though. I think he had dark pants. He seemed quite lanky. You could say I dreamt it, and I might have, but it felt so real and vivid. I was into wandering around the house at night if I woke up, a little weirdo that I was, but that night I stayed in bed and just watched this nose guy in tweed. I don't know how long it lasted, but I know it was peaceful. I probably drifted back to sleep, and that's the end of that memory. After seeing tweed at the window, I became obsessed with anything tweed. I wanted to know if we had any more tweed in the house, because Mom had a great tweed jacket. I can't say tweed was my favorite fashion textile at that age. I was into hot pink, lycra, and sequins, but I guess that started to change. I became obsessed with finding the same tweed tree guy was wearing. I would stare at Mom's tweed coat or Granddad's tweed hat and ask questions about how it was done. How do they get the colors in there like that? What holds it all together? How does the pattern come together? I never got a satisfactory response to my child understanding, only that it involved wool and spinning and things I couldn't comprehend, but it all sounded quite amazing. Now, the second time I saw what I think was tweed was at another property in Box Hill. My parents were constantly splitting and getting back together back then. When they split this time, I went with Mom to the top of a terrace. It was a flat above my grandmother's florist shop. One night, around tea time, I heard a fight in the street below. Mom wasn't bothered by the fight, but I went to the window. I saw some guys going at it on the street, likely drunk, but I also saw a pink figure like a dull neon light peering over the fence on the corner. The shop terrace was on a corner and there was a driveway or loading spot to the side with a fence around the back. I could see where the fence began. This pink thing had a long nose, like the tree guy, and was peering over the fence, presumably at the brawl. The fight ended as soon as it began, just a couple of yahoos. I told Mom there was someone behind the fence, but because of the brawl, she took it the wrong way and called the police. I couldn't get her to listen, so the police came and I guess I told them there was a pink man with a long nose looking over the fence. There's this hazy memory of a rather bemused older man with a younger man in tow and Mom talking a lot. Next time was at my grandmother's place. My parents were splitting again, this time for good. My grandmother's shop had moved down the road to the arcade so the terrace could be demolished to make way for a parking lot. Not even a good one, just a block of bitumen which next to no one used. It's still there today, but everyone parks on the street. Let's hear it for the 1980s Box Hill Council. So I was staying at my grandmother's house in Fern Tree Gully. It was Christmas time. Don't know before or after Christmas, but the tree was up. Her tree was probably from the 50s or 60s. It was about 5 feet, wire frame with green tinsel for leaves. It was quite gaudy. My grandmother was a pianist. One night, I had it in mind to get up late and play piano in the dark. Like that would be so gothic and cool. So I did, but I saw some pink outside from the window next to the piano. First, I thought it was a reflection from the Christmas tree, but it was moving across, not dangling or static like any tree ornament. I kept watching. It looked like the same pink figure in the police report. This time, perhaps, like the fence time, it was like an outline or an aura or a neon sign or a drawing, but moving like any person. I think he looked up at me or towards me where I was, which scared me, and I went back to bed. Well, I would have been about 6 then. My grandmother's house was a single story, but the front was elevated. The front windows looked over the yard at about a second story height. The figure was moving between the border of the neighbor's yard. There was a short fence that ran along between the yards, but the fence had come apart and had been removed along where the pink figure was moving. I don't remember which direction he was moving towards, where I was or towards the neighbor, only that I got jumpy when his head faced my direction. I think I was shocked to see him again. Now, much time had passed, possibly 10 years, and my parents had well and truly separated. I was now a teenager, and Ouija boards were of great interest to me. I managed to summon the so-called Charlie demon, only I didn't know about Charlie until I realized I'd been paranormally punked all those years ago. Long story short, through the Ouija board, I contacted some creep calling himself Charlie. The next few months were bothersome, to put it mildly. I'm not anti-Ouija board, quite the contrary, but I'm anti-misusing them. I was writing the handbook on Ouija misconduct as a teenager. The creep's reign of terror included touches, inappropriate ones at that, a general sense of foreboding, and one creepy apparition. It left me very fatigued and filled with self-doubt. Now, sometime after, when things had returned to normal, I saw Tweed again. This time, I'd just gone to bed. I heard something like a quiet bump near my bedroom door. I could see a silhouette and barely make out the same tweed coat, messy hair, and nose from the tree all those years ago. He was standing near my door watching me. I guess I could see the wall behind him, so he was pretty transparent. He tilted his head slightly like a pleasantry, then faded away. It was nice, like the time at Hotham Street, but this had happened in the street we were renting in Ferntree Gully. Second time I'd seen him in this suburb. The last time was a couple of years ago. This time it was very different because it was a dream, but it was the most revealing interaction I've had with this entity. I believe it was a visitation dream. In the dream, I was working in a haberdashery store in Ferntree Gully. This store existed in the 80s and 90s. It was possibly there before I was born, but I never worked there. It was daytime, a dark, cloudy day. Interior lights are on, warm light, the old-style globes. I'm working behind the counter. A man walks into the store and comes up to the counter. He looks familiar, hands me his coat. I can't place him. He's wearing black, no tweed, and he says something to me in a different language. I don't know the language, but understand the message. You're beautiful. I see you. The dream changes scene. I'm now standing in a disused room in a large home. It's nighttime. The lights are off. This room is filled with old furniture and statues, some covered with sheets. There are a couple of pianos in this room. I can see an expensive garden outside. I go to play on one of the pianos, but Tweed Guy, still wearing black and looking like a normal person, stops me. I didn't realize he was there. And he says in his own language, "Don't play them. We have to go." The scene changes. Now we're standing on a road or a driveway outside the same house, and it's still night. There are a lot of people, very rowdy. It's a street party. They don't see me or Tweed Guy in black. Something is coming, a bright light far down the road. Too bright, too big to be a car. It's slowly getting closer. I became aware they can't see the light. The closer it gets, the more reckless the party seems. Then, the next day, I started to think about that dream. I realized the coat he handed me at the beginning was a tweed one, but I don't know if I carried it from a scene to scene. At the time I dreamt this, I was going through a divorce. Never thought I'd say this, but then, does anyone? Perhaps his timing was key. It's a huge adjustment. We were together for 11 years. Even though it ended, I considered it a successful marriage. We just fell out of love, but we'll always care for each other. Now, I started recently researching the Box Hill area, and I was born in Box Hill, on the kitchen floor of a house in James Street. James Street is not far from Hotham Street. I didn't know about the Box Hill Artist Camp, which was a movement in the early years of Box Hills. Thinking back and doing some research, I think that Tweed's language could be Irish or Gaelic, something that would match the Tweed style. I don't have any Irish in my family to my knowledge. It's Scottish on my mother's side and English on my father's, but it's possible he's one of the Irish settlers, or he came in with Irish settlers as a nature spirit, adorning their fashion, as some tend to do. The nose thing, I looked into World War II prosthetics and nothing matched. The closest I can describe it is resembles a Casanova mask or a plague mask, except it didn't seem to be a mask. Not long after meeting my stepmom, my dad had moved from Hotham Street, and my stepmom's biggest, who's the biggest refuter of anything supernatural, hated the Hotham house. She said it was too dark and depressing and would change the subject. She does that whenever weird stuff is afoot. I think there was magic in that house. The house they moved to was near identical to the Hotham one. It was obviously the same plan with a few tweaks. That always amused me. We were the last ones to live there. It was demolished in the late 80s or early 90s. Just before it was pulled down, we went there. I'd been pestering to visit it for some time. Anyway, we went with one of my friends, met Dad there, had a bit of a picnic on the old back lawn. It was a great day. My stepmom didn't come. Weird, everything seemed smaller because I was older. We were going to go inside, but looking in the window, someone had left rusty old tools and nails strewn around. The old double doors of the lounge were gone. So were the light shades, and a stained glass window was taken out. Nice to think there might still be a bit of the old house in use today. I've been looking at Irish farming pictures and depictions from the late 1800s and early 1900s. The clothing seems to match Tweed's coat, so I'm fairly confident he's either an Irish settler or an Irish wee one who hitched a ride. Whoever or whatever he was. I'm glad to know him. He instilled in me a love of Tweed, too, obviously.